Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Osiris.
Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller. That's when it got wheels off. We started up and we ain't gonna stop. Oh, she made me feel like a god. That's when it got wheels off. Brandon Decker lives in Sedona, Arizona, and records under the moniker Decker with a lowercase d. He joins us from his home for this conversation. He is about to release his, eighth album? I should know this. He's been releasing records for years, and he's great. They're out on Royal Potato, which is a label known for its, you know, excellent taste. His music is very cool, hard to describe, which is, for me, the best kind of music. His new record is called Ouroboros. I'm spelling a lot of words for you, aren't I? Ouroboros. Decker, with a lowercase d, Ouroboros. He and I have met in real life before in Arizona this year, and I got a kick out of him. He's, you know, it's funny how sometimes I get hung up thinking how similar we all are, and sometimes I think how different we all are. In the course of one conversation with Brandon Decker, I experienced both of those phenomena. It's interesting to hear his perspective, because in so many ways, the Venn diagram overlaps with my own. And in so many ways, you know, we're different. It's great. I'm really grateful that he took the time to share his wisdom with me for your listening pleasure. Please welcome to Wheels Off, Brandon Decker. Welcome to Wheels Off, Brandon Decker. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
I am doing good this morning, Rhett, and thank you so much for having me.
So great. For the edification of our listeners, from where are you logging in?
I'm in my kitchen in Sedona, Arizona.
Oh my God, Sedona, such a magical place. And how long have you lived there?
Mostly about 16 years. And yeah. I say that there's some nuance to it. But I moved to Flagstaff, which, you know, is very nearby, 20 years ago. And then after I finished college up there, I ended up down here with a few, zigzags.
Of course, of course. It's a pretty magical place, though. I could see why you'd wind up there.
It's totally magical. It changed my life, honestly. I grew up in St. Louis, so I was a city type person, not too into nature. It's more into, you know, bars and mischief. So it changed my life being here. And, I would say, I think to the detriment in ways of my career as such, but, I don't know that I'd change it.
Yeah. Because maybe you chose Sedona over icy ambition, something like that.
City life, I mean, I was talking to someone about this the other day, just kind of the notion. When I started going with whatever my career is, I was like, you know, I'm going to be touring all the time. It doesn't matter where I live because I'm going to be on the road. And I was indeed on the road a lot, but I think it might have been helpful to have been in one of the hub cities, you know, of LA, Portland, Austin,
yeah,
New York, Nashville, something like that. But I, you know, just wasn't what destiny held.
Boy, yeah, I made a similar choice, and sometimes I wonder if I should regret it. But I feel like I don't regret it. If that makes sense, it seems like you're right in the same boat. Like you love being there.
I love being here. Although after being in Maui last week, I've been joking. Maui's the only place that makes you be like, well, Sedona's okay.
The grass is literally greener.
Quite green. Where was your similar choice? Up there in upstate?
Yeah, and I'm not far from New York City. So it's not apples and oranges because I'm 90 minutes from Manhattan. But we moved from L.A., you know, where we were pretty entrenched. And you staying in L.A. would have been a really smart choice career-wise. But, you know, I've loved raising kids in the country.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think that's a big thing for me as my son. And, you know, I remember being in New York after being a parent and watching, like, you know, the nannies taking the kids on the subway to school, and the school's right in the middle of the, you know, madness, and thinking, oh my God, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, we had the same thing. We go to New York City now and we look at the people dealing with little kids and we're like, oh my God, the logistics of kids at all are hard. But in Manhattan, forget about it. Forget about it. So, Brandon, what creative project are you working on right now? And how does it light you up?
Well, I've got a few. As you know, the biggest one is my recent album, Uroboros, which I recorded in the summer of 2022 and mixed with your friend Sam Cohen.
Yes.
And it's coming out here June 9th. And it was, you know, elaborate. I don't want to go on and on, but it was quite, I think, an ambitious and unique project for our times.
Yeah, no, please elaborate. That's what we're here for. What do you think makes it ambitious? How did it feel ambitious?
So kind of the quickest backstory is I had this just agonizing year. Had a rough parting with a partner. I mean, about as bad as it gets in a breakup. And one that I had been optimistic, you know, with in my middle age, I thought maybe was, you know, the one. But in that same time frame, my dad got diagnosed with cancer, made the decision to move in and kind of watch this rapid disintegration. You know, I remember when he had the diagnosis and he, you know, that generation, I'm 43. So you think of the parents' generation, they're a lot more stoic and kind of play the cards close than we are. But I remember this kind of grim diagnosis he presented and didn't discuss much and just looking at him being like, I can't imagine this being that bad. And then, you know, watching that deteriorate over, you know, 9 months. And, you know, at the same time, I was going to some heavy therapy on trauma. Mm-hmm. And realizing that a lot of that was tied in with my father, mm-hmm. and kind of being in this position of like accessing these old, like, you know, just like cellular realities, but also holding this deep compassion for someone watching, you know, that process. And in that whole subtext is where I wrote this album. And so I guess where the creative process starts there was, you know, I had this batch of 10 songs. And the first thing was I had this notion, I don't want to go sit in studio for weeks and overdubs and you know, I want to record this album definitively in 2 days. Wow. And then where that got more tricky was I knew that the songs had strings and choir and horns. I mean, it was, you know, like a small orchestra of sorts. So we've got, okay, we're going to go record 2 days, no overdubs with a 16-piece band. So kind of piecing that together, made this decision to record it out at this studio East West in Hollywood, the, you know, legendary place. Mm-hmm. Some people call it the Abbey Road of the U.S. You know, I've been saying, you know, everyone from Frank Sinatra to Kendrick Lamar have made records there. You know, and so at that point, it, relatively an independent artist. You know, I mean, I have some, you know, I have a label and some partners, but I mean, I'm doing most of the fun. I mean, looking at this idea that like literally was like, I mean, like downloaded like Moses or something, like you're going out into the desert. I knew it was going to be costly.
Yeah.
And kind of this idea of just trust and go do this. So that the space I held, I remember the day I finished recording, the day after we were, you know, we'd gone out to LA and rented these Airbnbs for this ensemble. And it, like, I remember the next morning I was out doing my morning yoga under this orange tree. It was like perfect LA. I mean, it was a summer day, but it was like beautiful. And there was like this light storm blowing through and I was like mildly getting rained on and like, just like this moment of surrender where I literally felt the space I held getting through the processes that led up to the album, the space I held, like it was like pushing a rock up a mountain for a year and a half to get out there. And it was, you know, it was done, at least that part, and just broke down into tears. You know, I was like, you know, I can't believe I held this space to do this.
Wow. I feel like in my life, there have been people that say, like, you know, you don't have to do this, right? Because this thing we do is hard. But I think what you might say to that, what I would say to that is, well, yeah, but well, I do actually have to do this. Right? Like you pushed through. You, it seemed like you had some sort of engine inside of you that wasn't necessarily under your control during all of this.
You know, it's funny because I've released 8 albums in, I don't know, 11 years or something like that. And such as to say, like, that seems like a lot of content. But to me, I have these friends who like write 6 songs a day. You know, I mean, like, they just live in this, like, you know, like, I'm always creating. And for me, I tend to answer. It's like I answer the muse when it comes with its idea. And then I might not create much music for a year. When I got this download of this is what I was going to do with the record, I just, you know, I followed it like, you know, like a dog following a squirrel.
It does seem like you fill up your agenda with a lot of hustle, like a lot of stuff that you do in music festivals, this line of synths that you have. Right.
Did you give the bottle to Erica?
I did, and she loves it.
That's great.
Yeah. So talk about that a little bit, because I think a lot of musicians are dealing with this reality right now of having to figure out a hustle in addition to what we do. A lot of artists in general, I feel bad for the TV writers. We're all trying to hustle on the side to, you know, to make rent.
Yeah. So, you know, I had... every year I had found as a father that, you know, so I used to maybe tour the country 2 to 3 times a year, just grinding. And every year I would just find, you know, I want to pull back. I want to be home more. And every year, you know, less and less dates on the road, but still feeling this obligation to be on the road. And I like components of it. I'm sure you would relate with that. I mean, like, I love performing. I love performing nightly and what happens musically. But a lot of the accoutrements of that life are exhausting.
Yeah.
And so every year I'm pulling back. Then it was like when COVID happened, there was this almost relief. I know a lot of people were like, what am I going to do? You know, I'd say pretty quickly, I was like, I'm going to be home and I have no other option. And I like this, you know, but the reality of like, okay, what am I going to do now? Was there financially, if we're not performing. And I had come across this product called Agua de Florida in an ayahuasca ceremony. And this is like this ancient perfume, 100-year-old, ancient's probably not, very old perfume that they use in these ceremonies. And I kind of had this notion I was going to make a cleaner Sedona version, because this Agua de Florida kind of smells like grandpa's aftershave. And I was like, I'm going to make a clean version of this and I'm going to sell it to, you know, some shamanic workers I know. So I started teaching myself how to make perfume, reading a lot. And it actually ended up pretty quickly. I realized I've got a much bigger market with tourists in Sedona than I do with shamanic workers, of which I know about three. And I got one of those loans that they were doing for my music business, and spent like $8,000 on essential oils and scales and beakers and flasks. And just like, I mean, I didn't even know what I was doing. And it was kind of one of these things of, I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just was like, it was an interesting period because, you know, that COVID summer 2020, I would like go hike or kayak all day. And then I would come home and like, you know, put on some music and just work on this formula. And, you know, when it got done, I was running out of money. The loan was running out. And it was time to just launch, you know, whatever it was. And I didn't know if it was good or not. And, you know, lo and behold, you know, that first year I sold like $80,000 worth of it. And,
wow,
you know, stores nationwide. And it's still just me. Yesterday I spent my whole day making and bottling perfume.
Dude, that's so cool. I love it.
It's funny. You know, I figured out how to do things, to see projects into birth where I found maybe limitation is taking them to another level, you know? And I'm not sure what to make of that. That's probably more of a talk with a therapist or something than for our purposes.
Or like a CFO or something like that.
I could definitely use a better business mind in everything I do. I lead with the heart.
Can't we all? Wouldn't we all? Yeah. I wonder, so when you were starting out, I don't imagine you thought you'd wind up being a perfumier or whatever, but I do, you know, I think you identify primarily as a musician. When you were a kid, do you remember a moment where you knew music was going to be your life? Was there an epiphany moment? Do you remember identifying for the first time as a musician, an artist?
You know, I was a late bloomer with music. I always loved it. You know, my mom was a, you know, child of the 60s. And, you know, so I grew up, I remember loving The Door. I mean, just, you know, the standard classic rock. The Doors were my pivotal band from that period. And I loved singing. I remember as a kid, I loved singing harmonies. Always listening to music. But for me, music was a college thing. I remember one time this roommate I had came home with a couple girls and played a Dave Matthews song. And they were just like, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to learn how to play some songs on a guitar. And that was kind of the birth, you know? And I remember So I instantly taught myself how to sing while I played, you know, and I remember loving singing and playing guitars. And I would say in terms of fun, that was really when my music endeavors were the funnest, you know, those early days of just like, I can do this, I can sing and play, you know. Then when I finished college, that was kind of, so like I'm like 25 at that point. I remember I took like my first corporate job out of college. And I just remember being like, no, I want to put a band together and make a record and go tour. And so that shift happened in my mid-20s. I'm sure you were much younger. Yeah. Weren't you like in your teens when?
Yeah, I started young. I was like 16, first gig. And
is that the picture you posted recently?
Probably, yeah.
There's a good one.
I was a teenage folky. But that's so funny. So you did finish college, though. You had a full degree and everything.
I have a lot of debt.
Oh, God.
A degree in philosophy.
Wow. Is it something that you ever agonize over? Like, oh, man, I really should have stayed in the corporate world. I mean, I can't imagine you in the corporate world.
No, I don't think I'm long-term employable. You know, we moved up to California, Bay Area for 1 year, 2018. And it was when I released my last album. And it was terrible planning. I basically moved to the Bay Area when a U.S. tour ended. Oh. And, you know, so I come home, I'm exhausted, I'm broke. And I just moved to probably the most expensive place in the continental U.S.
Yeah.
And, you know, so quickly I got a job, first job in years, for a restaurant group doing their social media. And did not like it. It was really uninspired. You know, it was funny. They'd show me the social media of like really interesting influencers. And they'd be like, we want you to make social media that looks like this. But they did not want me to leave my desk. And I was just like, you know, if you want stuff to look like this, I'm going to need to go out and do things, you know? So I had that job, and I remember I got fired. I think what I hadn't realized was that technology had advanced to a place where they watched what you emailed and shit, you know?
So
I was like still working on little mini tours sometimes where I was going to probably need to ask off for work and like sending these dates to my publicist, like, here's what we're looking at, you know? And then one day I walked in, they just fired me. You know, my point is, like, I have too much going on of what I love and am passionate about to invest in someone else's vision.
Yeah.
Which sometimes even makes me sad, because sometimes people's visions are really cool. It's not the corporate thing. Like, it might be a fellow artist who's like, this is what I'm doing. And I have to be like, oh man, I just know I can't do that. And yet at the same time, I'm so dependent on other people and appreciative and humbly grateful for the artists that do that with me. But, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, I've got the ideas of the things I want to do, and they keep me occupied.
And it doesn't involve working for the man.
No.
Restaurant.
Although that stability, you know, sometimes looks nice, doesn't it, Rhett?
You know, yeah, I've got close friends and relatives that have good jobs and health packages, and it's hard not to envy their security. Yeah, their stability. But
I think you trade security for everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it was just me, like, I mean, you and I both have gone through large periods of our life, I would imagine, where we've been just living in abject squalor. And that, like, if it's just me, who cares? Like, right. I don't care. I can live through that. But there's younger versions of me now that share my DNA that makes it a lot different.
And thank God.
Yeah.
You know? I think of my son like he saved my life, you know. Yeah. Like, I remember when he was born, I had just completed my second tour and album, and like the day he was born, kind of this come to Jesus moment of like, if you do this now, if you continue, you're going to need to get your shit together.
Yeah.
Like, it can't be out on the road and drinking and half-assed, like, you know. And I think in that way he carved me bringing a professional approach to being a musician instead of that like kind of 20s jack off kind of thing that a lot of, you know, I think there's a notion that musicians are kind of deadbeats, you know, they're late to everything, you know, or whatever. And, you know, I think the birth of my son was really this, like, you can do this, like just this self accountability. You can do this, but you're going to have to do better than that.
Thank goodness. Well, so I wonder when you, because it seems like what I know about you is you do spend a lot of time. You've already mentioned therapy during this conversation, and you've mentioned, you know, morning yoga. I know that you do a lot of practice on yourself, on your mental well-being, on your spiritual well-being. When you come up against internally generated obstacles, negative voices in your head, the things that are trying to keep you from being the best version of you or making the best art you can make, what have you figured out as a way to get through or beyond those obstacles?
Anything and everything. You know, I guess it's, you know, everyone gets a unique path. You know, I don't want to, like, I try to realize everyone's different, but I have always felt like, you know, life is full of beauty and life is full of so much suffering. And personally, I've suffered a lot. And I take that in perspective to what it's like to suffer in America as a middle-class person, as opposed to the rest of the world that is in a much different situation than we are. Yet, you know, it's like Neil Young had that one line and, basically, you know, my problems, you know, don't mean anything, but they mean something to me or something. You know that line? What is?
Yeah. You only have your own perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're very real, you know? So my suffering's been so acute in life. I mean, and at times destructive, that, and can be so overwhelming and gripping that navigating and integrating them has been dire. So, you know, my path to healing, you know, it's just been like one little piece at a time, you know. Hiking and time on the land was a big one for me early on moving here, just realizing what medicine spending time in nature is. What was your question was, what are some of the things?
Yeah, I just wonder about like what you've figured out, because I know, I mean, you know we talked about like you doing hot plunges, you working on what's the thing where you hold your breath for minutes at a time?
The Wim Hof.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you do a lot in terms of trying to find solutions to the inner turmoil.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like whatever path we end up on, I guess, you know, it's like when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. Yeah. You know, and I think I've also always tried to paint myself into a corner where I would have no option other than A, right? And so like the option is I want to be healthy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the further, you know, and I'm no, for a Sedona, I'm not like a, you know, crystal crunching rainbow you know. But health feels good, especially in the middle age, you know. So I think I've just embraced anything that made me feel better, you know, like stretching my body daily makes me feel better. Working my muscles and being active makes me feel better. Meditation, all of the noise in anyone's life, whether you're in the city or, there's so much, and my mind particularly is nutty. You know, so I mean, to be able to slow down and get present a couple times a day, I'm still a lunatic, you know, but like at least those 20 minutes a day, I, you know, can get there. And, you know, I think I've always been open to anything that might help me have a better quality of life and more joy and freedom.
Yeah.
So, you know, some things I've tried and they don't really stick, and some things do, but I'll try anything once, you know.
You wake up pretty early generally, right?
Presently, I'm about a 5 a.m.er.
See, yeah, that's pretty good.
I don't like it. That's strictly because my son goes to school a half hour away.
Oh, okay.
So get up and do my practice, which is like breath work, yoga, meditation, and working out.
Yeah.
Because that's how I can start my day high. Yeah. To do that before I take him to school, I have to get up at 5. Now, that said, he's got a week and a half left of school, and I'm probably going to get more into like a 6:45 type thing.
Oh, sleeping in. It's funny. It's funny how life goes, right? I remember always staying up till 4 a.m. and sleeping till noon. I have a friend who's a producer that is on a complete vampire schedule where he wakes up at 9 o'clock every night, has breakfast, goes into work, has dinner at 9 a.m. and goes to bed at noon again.
Wow.
Day after day, opposite schedule.
I bet he's pasty.
That is a good word for him. Okay, so I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind trying to distill some of this wisdom you've been sharing, imagining a 21-year-old version of yourself, but in today's world, and what advice might you share with 21-year-old you?
You know, I was up in Flagstaff the other day on an appointment, and I got routed through the campus where I went to college, and I palpably felt the like fear and insecurity of, you know, youth, late teens, early 20s. And I had such a, like, it made me sad, but then I had this just like really compassionate, like, oh man, yeah, I really feel for that guy, you know? Do you remember that phase?
Yeah.
Those early 20s?
Yeah, it's you, and you wish you could just hug that kid.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, you know, the kind of advice would be like, you know, everything's always going to be okay. You know, believe in yourself. Be a little easier on yourself. Start an IRA. but, you know, I think chase your dreams, which I did. But I think 21-year-old me needed to feel a little safer in the world. You know, like I think that period of time, just I felt like a dog in a corner, internally and externally. And I think that caused a lot of behaviors in life, you know, like, I mean, just a lot of fight or flight stuff,
yeah.
You know, how I might react in a relationship that got edgy, you know, maybe, you know, lashing out or running from things or, you know, the chemicals, just checking out. You know, I think just 21-year-old me probably did need someone to just hug them and tell them everything would be okay.
Mm.
That's why your son seems so well adjusted, you know, I think because he's had you doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's a tough time, and you just want to love these kids up so much. And yeah, I think you're doing a great job. It, back at you, you know, I've witnessed your parenting, and it seems like, I think we are doing we're doing a good service for the world as we give them these kids that have gotten a lot of love from us. So that's all we can do.
Yeah.
Man, I'm so excited for your new record. I hope I get to see you again before too long. And I really appreciate you sitting down for the Wheels Off treatment. Thank you so much, Brandon.
Thank you. Did you pop on the test press yet?
Yeah, it's great. Dude, I'm so excited for you. Sam Cohen, you know, he's been a Wheels Off guest before. It's, you know, I think you said you listened to it. But so great. So well done. I'm super proud of you.
Thank you, my friend.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Hope to see you soon. All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Osiris.
Hi, this is Henry Kay, host of the number one music history podcast, Rootsland. Come with me on a journey to Kingston, Jamaica, where we explore the world of reggae music and the untold stories of some of the genre's greatest legends. From the ghettos and tenement yards where the music was born, to the island's iconic recording studios, we are so excited to team up with Osiris Media, the leading storyteller in music. Because as you'll hear, sometimes the story is the best song.